Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Excited to be here. How are you guys doing?
Super.
Okay. We're in Daniel chapter 3. Always like to start with the first few, like 5 minutes or so, just reviewing. won't take too long here, but wanted to reintroduce kind of some themes that we went over yesterday before we continue to move through chapter 3 here. So, okay. The last wave of captives are taken into Babylon, and they meet which king? Who do they meet first under Babylon? Nebi, come on. Yeah, Nebuchad. Okay, we're just going to leave him like that. Then there's going to be another Babylonian king that shows up. His name is... All right, so we got Belshazzar. Then the power shifts to the Medo-Persian Empire, and the first Medo king introduced is... Okay. And then we see who else at the end? Cyrus. So I did this because I just wanted to show us the plan, because the book of Daniel is not written chronologically. And so I want us to see, and we've talked about this, how are we going to attack this? So we're going to go through the first four chapters, which primarily deal with Nebuchadnezzar and his interaction with the Jews, okay? Then we're going to go forward to chapters 7 and 8, all right? Come back, finish chapter 5, and that's where the Babylonian Empire is going to come to an end. Then we'll pick it back up here in chapter 6. We already did 7 and 8 over here, so then we'll do 9 and then finish out the book. So I've showed us this. This is the plan. Now, if it's still confusing to you, the way I've been trying to get you to remember is it's just the seven and the eight numerically that are out of order. So if we take 7 and 8 and just bring it forward and put it right after chapters 1 through 4, that's going to, I think, an easier way to remember that. And I think this is a good thing to do. Now, when we do this, I do believe that you miss out on a pretty cool theme that comes through. And in my opinion, the reason why the book of Daniel is written in the order that it's written. So let's put the, chapter 1, the captives are introduced to Nebuchadnezzar, right? So let's look at this here. Let's do through there. Got 1 through 4, 5, okay. What happens in chapter 2? Nebuchadnezzar's dream. He has a dream of a what? And that statue represents worldly kingdoms, right? Now, this isn't fair because we haven't got there, but I did tell you last week, what's the significance of chapter 7 as it relates to chapter 2? Another dream. And yes, and in chapter 7, all these beasts appear, right? Now, when we go through chapter 7, you're going to see that it also represents world kingdoms. In fact, the same world kingdoms, basically, that chapter 2 introduced, all right? So, here's the section, numerically. Wedged in the middle of world kingdoms, world power, influence, idolatry, all the things that come with that, right, are two major themes. The first major theme that shows up in chapters 3 and chapter 6. So we began reading chapter 3 last week. What happens in chapter 3? You can even look at your title heading if you want. Kendall, what happens in chapter 3?
can build a golden image.
Yeah, and then ask the people to bow down to it, right? Some of the Jews aren't going to bow down, and they're going to get thrown into a fiery furnace. Does God deliver them? Okay, now, chapter 6. What does your title heading say above chapter 6? Daniel serves Darius. Keep scanning down then. What happens in chapter 6? Maya? The lion's den. Okay, another example of world power coming in saying you will do or won't do. God's people, in this case Daniel, stand for the truth and for God, right? And so he's thrown into the lion's den. Does God deliver him? Okay, so these two chapters are connected in their themes. Okay, God's people stand for the Lord. World powers try to destroy God's people. God delivers his people. Okay, now, what happens in chapter 4? I told you how to remember this. What else has 4? Come on, I even told you about Sue's play. Come on, come on. What has 4? That's right. Animals have 4 legs. So the play that Sue wrote this has been a number of years now, she did this chapter, and she titled it From King to Quadruped, Back to King Again, right? And a quadruped just means a 4 walking, critter. So, all right. In chapter 4, Nebuchadnezzar gets... What'd you say, Rain? Yeah. He gets judgment by God, right? Namely due to his arrogance. Boy, that whole, you, O King of Kings, you are the head of gold, that did not do a lot of good for old Nebi, Because it's... when we finish Daniel chapter 3, Nebuchadnezzar says, you didn't bow down to my image or serve my gods, right? It's like, okay, let's say the statue was of Bel, okay, in chapter 3. Isn't Nebuchadnezzar the image of God among them? Like, it's a pretty good chance that the statue in chapter 3 was inspired by the dream from chapter 2. So, the dream in chapter 2, Nebuchadnezzar, you, O King of Kings, all the land and the animals have been given into your hand. You, O King, are the head of gold. So that went to his head. So then, you read chapter 4, not good, okay? So, God humbles him. Now, what happens in chapter 5? Which is the reason why chapter 5 is the split between the Babylonian and Medo-Persian Empire. What happens in chapter 5? Okay, Belshazzar is judged. Now, we're actually given a specific thing that he does that shows his extreme arrogance and haughtiness towards God. What did he do? This is all review. That's why I'm pushing you guys this morning. Yeah, he goes and gets the gold vessels that were taken out of the temple, right, that Solomon had built, that Nebuchadnezzar had burned to the ground but took all the gold out, right? He went and found them things so they could drink wine out of them, and they're just partying, okay? I say resting on their laurels, okay? Maybe a little too much drinky-drinky. And then an inferior nation, Daniel chapter 2 says, right? An inferior nation comes in and takes them away. So, I believe that that's why Daniel's not written chronologically and it's written this way. Okay? Because you've got, look, the world powers. It always looks like the world powers are winning, right? You see how you can apply this to today? God's people stand for the Lord. God will deliver you. Okay? And then at the end, will God judge the oppressor? Yeah. God gonna judge the oppressor. Okay? All right. Now back to going through Daniel chronologically. Chapter 3. So, verse 1, Nebuchadnezzar the king made an image of gold, the height of which was 60 cubits, and its width 6 cubits, and he set it up in the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. So, 60 cubits tall, roughly. We explained the difference in cubits last week. Roughly, how tall is this thing? What else do you know in Montana that's 90 feet tall? Yeah, that big statue outside the highway outside Butte, right? So, I mean, when you're, and it's not exactly close to the highway. I mean, it's pretty removed and up on top of the hill, right? That's a 90-foot tall statue. Okay, that's what that looks like. All right, so pretty big. All right. He sets it up in the plain of Dura. A lot of the idols, the images, the statues that, you know, the Persian and Babylonian and Assyrian empires built were usually in the city. So why is this one in the plain of Dura? Because the plain of Dura shows up nowhere else in the Bible. Why is it in a plain? Yeah. Absolutely. When I think of the plains in the States, I think of the place where people have room to have lots of cattle, right? There's lots of open space. So he takes this thing, which they believe to be a little north and west of Shinar, okay, this plain of Dura, so he can have it built there. All right, verse 2. Then Nebuchadnezzar the king sent word to assemble the satraps, the prefects, the governors, the counselors, the treasurers, the judges, the magistrates, and all the rulers of the provinces to come to the dedication of the image that Nebuchadnezzar the king had set up. This is the last thing that jumped out to us last week. Although, in the end of chapter 2, Nebuchadnezzar confesses what? He confesses that the God of Daniel, right, is Lord of kings and God of gods. But apparently that wasn't enough to keep him from being an idolater, was it? Right? These nations believed that their nations have a god and other nations have gods and that their god is just, you know, better than the other gods, but they've always accepted the fact that there are other gods. And so he has this great thing happen, which is, you know, his sorcerers and Chaldeans can't give him the interpretation of the dream. And then, you know, they're very clear that only a god could do this. And then Daniel comes in with God and gives him the interpretation of the dream. And all it does for him is just move the God of the Israelites a little bit higher. You know, okay, he's probably better than the God of, like, the Egyptians, you know. Maybe those stories are true. You know, maybe he is stronger than the gods of the Egyptians. But he's still building images of Baal. Okay, so, verse 3. The satraps, prefects, governors, counselors, treasurers, judges, magistrates, all the rulers of the provinces were assembled for the dedication of the image that Nebuchadnezzar the king had set up, and they stood before the image that Nebuchadnezzar had set up. Who's in, and don't repeat the list, who's invited to this thing? Who did he bring? Leaders? Rulers? Right? So are the common people here? They're not. Okay. Verse 4, then the herald loudly proclaimed, "To you the command is given, O peoples, nations, and men of every language, that at the moment you hear the sound of the hort, flute, lyre, trigon, psaltery, bagpipe, and all kinds of music, you are to fall down and worship the golden image that Nebuchadnezzar the king has set up. But whoever does not fall down and worship shall immediately be cast in the midst of the furnace of blazing fire." Therefore, at that time, when all the peoples heard the sound of the horn, flute, lyre, trigon, psaltery, bagpipe, all kinds of music, all the people, nations, men of every language fell down and worshiped the golden image that Nebuchadnezzar the king had set up. I just think sometimes that can be confusing for people, because then you read verse 7 and it says all the men, all the people, the nations, the men of every language fell down. It's like these leaders were from all the nations, speaking all the languages. Okay, they represented the people. The common people weren't there yet. See, I mean, that's how it works, right? You want to roll out a new idea that puts you more in charge and gives you more power. You know, you got to go sway the leadership first, and then once you get them, they can go get the people, right? So we've got this. This great dedication ceremony is how Nebuchadnezzar has decided to do this. So, okay, let's go through these verses here. Not a ton to dig out. So when I read verse 2, if you're like me, my first question is, what is a satrap? You know, just voted recently, right? And for, you know, clerks and justices and, you know, senators. And I didn't see any satraps on the ballot, okay? So, you know, what is a satrap? Well, the short, easy answer is it's a governor. Okay, now hang on here a second. If you go to chapter 6, I was really trying to think of a way to explain this, but chapter 6, verse 1. It seemed good to Darius to appoint 120 satraps over the kingdom, that they would be in charge of the whole kingdom and over the three commissioners of whom Daniel was one, and these satraps might be accountable to them, and that the king might not suffer loss. Then Daniel began distinguishing himself among the commissioners and satraps because he possessed an extraordinary spirit, and the king planned to appoint him over the entire kingdom. Then the commissioners and satraps began trying to find grounds of accusation against Daniel in regard to government affairs, but they could not find no ground of accusation or evidence of corruption, inasmuch as he was faithful and no negligence or corruption was to be found in him. Skip forward, verse 6. Then these commissioners and satraps came by agreement to the king and spoke to him as follows, King Darius, live forever. So there's another place for these satraps. So these guys are pretty prominent position in the kingdom. Okay? They're, in short, they're governors. Now here's the follow-up, back to verse 2, chapter 3. So if satrap basically means governor, and probably has its roots in the Persian style of government. Okay, the word has Persian roots. I always called it, I even have it written in my Bible, a satrap is just a Persian governor. And you got to remember, like, we first are introduced to the Chaldeans in chapter 1, right? There's all kinds of languages, people, political parties, nations that have, I mean, there's all kinds of people melding together to constitute this nation of Babylon. So the Chaldeans were Babylons, but not all Babylons were Chaldeans. Okay? And so you've got Persians. There were people from the Assyrian Empire that held positions of power in the Babylonian Empire as well. Okay, you just read this stuff. So you've got all kinds of cultures and languages coming together, which is what we see when he invites leadership, and then they're bowing down before this statue, and it says, all the peoples, nations, and men of every language bow down. Like, there's a pretty diverse group here being represented by the leadership. So they're coming with their titles, the origins of their language. Some of it's being translated into the native language. Some of it's being we live in America. I hope we get it. Okay, we have all sorts of cultures coming together, different words and languages. Some of these words have been transliterated. Okay, because when you read verse 2, if satrap means governor, so then why say governor twice? That's my thought, right? He assembled all the governors, the prefects, and the governors. Okay, these other governors would have been much smaller in their area of influence. Nobody agrees 100%, but the lowercase governor, not the satrap, but the lowercase governor is probably the one in that region, in that particular area in the plain of Dura. And you would have had governors everywhere. Where when we read chapter 6, we see that these governors that are placed are being given large areas of dominion. Okay? So the one thing that they do agree on is that this second position of governor that shows up after satrap and prefect is clearly inferior to the satrap. That most people agree with. The satraps would have been governors of entire provinces. Okay, what I'm trying to tell you is you have a meld of languages, positions, titles, and not a single etymologist agrees. Okay, on the exact origin of these titles, their exact role, responsibility. It seems like there's some overlap. I gave you an example of what a ballot looks like in America today. The ballot probably looks different in Australia and England, where they also speak English. They have different titles. I mean, just understand those people are bringing their cultures together, and that's how we end up with all of these titles. The important thing to know from this, to zoom back out, is that the ruling class are there. Okay? So we move on. All these guys show up, and they stand before the statue. Maybe it's just obvious. And when this thing plays out, it's Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego that don't bow down to this thing, right? But it's like there is no stability of principle among the ungodly. It's just not, okay? They're there. They want their peace. They don't want to lose their position of influence. They're here. They're willing to bow down. Anyway, so here you have the horn, flute, lyre. I mean, do you guys know what a trigon is? Anybody? You know? You ever read this? Like, oh, yeah, you know. Why couldn't it have just said saxophone, clarinet, you know, trumpet, you know, flute, you know, xylophone? You know? Okay. What I would think is they're about 25% like flute-like wind instruments and then like 75% stringed instruments. Okay. And a lot of them in like harp, violin shapes. Okay. So there's a little bit of debate on this, but I wanted to run through it really quick. All right. Because if you're like me and you read this, you're like, what is that? A lyre? We know what a horn is, right? I mean, lots of renditions of the horn, but same concept, right? We've got the horn. Flute? Okay. Whew, the one English word that we recognize, right? The flute. We all know what a flute is. Okay. Now, what is a lyre? Yeah. Probably more like a handheld harp. Because you see those like massive harps, maybe one that, you know, David probably played. A lyre is like a stringed handheld one, but typically still played with the hands. Okay? Because then you go on to the trigon, it's also similar to a lyre, which was similar to the harp. That was the best definition I could get. Okay? But they're very similar in nature. Stringed instrument, probably played with the hands, handheld version of a harp. The psaltery is the one that's a little bit different. So it's another form, and you can actually look these up. And it's funny, because you'll look them up, and you'll think you have it figured out, and then you'll see a different picture. But the psaltery was a handheld stringed instrument, but could also be played with like a wand, or usually played with a wand. And that would be a little bit of the difference there. Which one do we have left? Yeah, bagpipe. I'm not going to explain a bagpipe or give you a demonstration like I did with the trumpet. You know. Okay? So these guys show up and they're bowing down to the image. Why? Why is that the commandment from Nebuchadnezzar? So, Kevin said indirectly worshiping him, yes, okay? Although, in my humble opinion, the statue would have been in the image of Bel. It would have been of Bel. It would have very much probably been in Nebuchadnezzar's likeness, okay? Why else have him bow down? Your hint is Revelation chapter 13. Are there beasts in the book of Revelation? The one that represents, do you see why you have to study Daniel before you can study the book of Revelation? The beast, there's three, I'll say, not including the devil. There is a beast in the book of Revelation that is a composite sketch of the world powers introduced in Daniel chapter 7. Okay, and so that's the tie-in. So you have this one that represents world power. You know, typically we think of that in the form of like government. You have different forms of government. You've got communists and oligarchies and republics, but okay, government. Then there's another, and we're going to skip Babylon the harlot, right? So who's the other beast in this scenario in Revelation? Do we remember? The false prophet, right? So there's your idol worshipers and your denominationalism and accept Jesus into your heart and all that stuff. What does the false prophet do in Revelation chapter 13? It's the false prophet's job in Revelation chapter 13 to get the people to worship the beast and its image, which is the beast is a composite sketch of these world powers from Daniel. So it's a test of loyalty to the state. That's why Nebuchadnezzar builds him a statue. Nebuchadnezzar represents what? The power. Bel represents the idol, the false prophet, right? And together, getting the people. And the idol is the one that gets the people to bow down, but they're actually, say it again, Kevin, they're actually declaring allegiance to Nebuchadnezzar, who is the world. That is exactly, that's Revelation chapter 13, in a nutshell. But in Daniel, isn't God cool? How much time are these separated from when they were written? It's amazing. And we understand that about the Bible. Okay? But that's why. To declare allegiance to the state, okay? Satan's up to his same tricks. Why doesn't he change them up? They work. They work, they work, they work. Now look, if God has put eternity on a man's heart, and you can try to be atheist or some form of agnostic or something, you have this thing inside of you that's designed to worship a divine entity. You can't just like completely bury that, right? I mean, the natives just worship the ground, right? The atheist, I mean, they're humanists to the core, right? Just mankind, you know, the ultimate promotion of man. Man is the all. I mean, they are humanists to the core. That's their God. Okay. They worship themselves. So, you know, you can see how the false prophet and then where the power is consolidated on the earth are working hand in hand in Daniel. But then that's how God has chosen to communicate to us what that looks like in the book of Revelation. It's the exact same. So devil's up to his tricks. He doesn't change them because they work, all right? I'll pause for any thoughts or comments on that, and then we'll keep moving through Daniel here.
Yeah, just one question on Daniel. In chapter 3, he doesn't appear.
Yeah.
So
that's my next note.
Okay, good. Thank you.
I don't have an answer for you, but it's my next talking point. Yeah. So I think we're, let's pick it up in verse 8 here. And then we'll start on that point. Man, verse 7, all the peoples, the nations, the men of every language fell down and worshipped Nebuchadnezzar, declaring allegiance to the state. Don't you ever feel like the world around you is doing that? Oof. Verse 8. For this reason, at that time, certain Chaldeans came forward and brought charges against the Jews. They responded and said to Nebuchadnezzar the king, O king, live forever. Yes, they're buttering him up, but Daniel does the same thing, I think, in chapter... I don't remember. 6? So it was a very custom thing to do. It's not like Daniel's going to say these same words. So can't completely throw these guys under the bus yet. Verse 12 is a very interesting verse. I hope we get to it today. Verse 10. You, O king, have made a decree that every man who hears the sound of the horn, flute, lyre, trigon, psaltery, bagpipe, all kinds of music. You guys remember what all those are, right? Okay, good. Is to fall down and worship the golden image. But whoever does not fall down, worship, shall be cast into the midst of a furnace of blazing fire. There are certain Jews whom you have appointed over the administration of the province of Babylon, namely Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, have disregarded you. They do not serve your guards and worship the image which you have set up. Okay. What's the first thing you notice? Rain. He said all the Jews, right? So there's your other clue. Why weren't there like another 500 Jews rounded up who weren't bowing down to this thing, who were, okay, that's because it was just the leadership, just the ruling class. You know, why isn't Daniel there? Why isn't Daniel present? Don't know. The Bible never says. And I don't encourage you to, and I usually would say don't do it because, you can try to look into it, but what are you going to get that God has or hasn't given you in the Word? I don't know, you know, but God also wants us to think. So if you want to think, you know, that's good. Daniel was in charge of the kingdom, and he was given a lot of power and influence and responsibilities. He probably just is out of town, my guess. Okay? Well, I'm serious. That might seem funny, but okay. I think he's probably off somewhere else. And when it comes time to bring out the dedication to the statue, Nebuchadnezzar's got an agenda. He's not going to wait 3 weeks for Daniel to get back in town. He's just going to get it done. Okay? I don't know why he's not there. The Bible doesn't say. So it becomes fairly clear that even though, who are the people that are accusing Daniel? The Chaldeans? What was the relationship between Daniel and the Chaldeans in chapter 2? They couldn't do what he was able to do. Think that maybe bore a grudge? Yeah. Jealousy? Now here's the last thing to think about. Didn't Daniel just save their lives? Whew. Sin, when it gets in the heart, man, it's not logical. This guy single-handedly, through his character and bravery, and then with God's help, because that's where his faith and trust was in God, right? Saved their life. Now, these number of years go by. That's debated. But it's not like this happened the next week, okay? And this statue is built. And these are the guys who couldn't do what Daniel was able to do, but Daniel's the reason that they're alive. And they just can't wait for him to get what's coming to him. Oh, that is not a good position to be in. Okay? You don't want those feelers crawling around your heart. Vengeance and revenge and jealousy and selfish ambition. Which James says, yeah, not good. But just reminding you guys, he saved their lives. Okay, and they can't wait for him to be thrown in the fiery furnace of blazing fire. Okay, now, verse 12. This is what I really wanted to get to today, and I'm glad that we have time. Look at verse 12. Now, some of this carries over, but I'm going to concentrate on verse 12. This is a targeted attack. I will remind you. Now, the Gospel of John is very interesting. It doesn't get called a synoptic gospel because its writing style and its information is too different from Matthew, Mark, and Luke. Not different in contradictory, just different in the stories that are recorded. We get a better picture of Jesus' life on earth with this gospel, right? It's in chapter 5 that the leadership have written, in John chapter 5, you're just a few chapters into the Gospel of John, and the Jewish leadership have already resolved in their heart to kill Jesus. And then takes like some 15 chapters later to get it done. This is a targeted attack. This idea, seated in the mind many years earlier. Okay. These are certain Jews whom you have appointed over administration. The province of Babylon, namely Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, have disregarded you. Do not serve your God or worship the golden image which you have set up. You know, if they care so much, Let's do an example here. Okay, Marshall, stand up. Super Dave, stand up. Kate, stand up. Okay. If they care King, live forever. Your statutes are so important, right? Why didn't they go, should I let Kevin be the king? Oh, king, live forever. You know, face me when I'm talking to you. This is what I would have done, right? Because I cared so much about the king and his rules. Those guys aren't bowing. Those guys aren't kneeling.
On your knees.
Okay, yeah, yeah. Okay, down. You guys can have a seat. Do you guys see what I'm saying? What? What? Why? Those guys aren't bowing. Look. Look. They're not bowing. That's what I would have done. What do they do? Well, let's break this down. They strike while the iron's hot. Don't they? Catch the king in his huff. First, they read the established law, right? Then they say the Jews do not observe the king's established law, and that these people, by standing, despise the king's law, and they despise the king's authority. They're abusing the king's favor and leniency to them. Do you guys see that? These men whom you have appointed over Babylon, look at how they're abusing your leniency. Look at how they're abusing your favor. And yet they declare their defiance by not conforming to the king's law. Is that, and that's all in verse 12. Look at it. Now, some of it's kind of carrying over from 10 and 11, but I would say the seeds of all of that are in verse 12. Is that a little bit different than, look at those guys. This is a targeted attack. Thought out ahead of time. Hey, you going to that thing in Dura? You guys going? You think them Jewish boys are going to show up? What do you think they're going to do? You know, they show up, won't even eat the king's food. Who are these punks? 14-year-old kids? Won't even eat what's given to them? What, they don't know what's good? Right? From the second they meet these guys, they're not doing what Nebuchadnezzar asked them to do. Right? Then mix in a little bit. Oh, and now they can do what they weren't able. Daniel and his friends could do what the Chaldeans weren't able to do through their tricks and their gods. Yeah. Super targeted attack. Now, I put a little time into this because I think this will work. Let's say Reagan's doing something she shouldn't be doing. Okay? Cherie, stop laughing. He just knows my kids so well. There's a reason why Reagan's this one in the story. But you also see why Ethan's the one in this story. Let's say Reagan's doing something she shouldn't be doing. Sometimes Ethan looks at her and then stares at me with those questioning eyes. And what are those eyes saying? What's Dad going to do? What's Dad going to say? You know, he told us not to do that, and Reagan's doing it. So now we go back to where the authority, the command, and the power, you know, come. That's the normal reaction, right? And that looks like this. Those guys, you say you guys are all standing, you know, they're like, King. That's normally how you would react, okay? In this example, let's say, yes, Reagan, you may have ice cream right before bed. I only ask that you eat it in the kitchen so that you do not make a mess. Okay? Let's say Ethan takes it upon himself to inform me of Reagan's actions. Okay? Not eating in the kitchen, right? Remind me of my own words. Remember when you said, Dad, that we're not allowed to eat in the kitchen? You see how this is already different? Hey, Dad, remember when you said how we're not allowed to eat in the kitchen? Okay? And then repeating it back to me. Well, you know, Reagan's not eating in the kitchen. And she's on the threshold of the kitchen and the living room, right? She got like one, but she's not in the kitchen because she's part of it. You know, she's not following your rule. Also reminding me that I granted her this favor, ice cream before bed, right? And she's using my favor to what? Promote her own will. which is she's going to take what I gave her, which was ice cream, and she's going to eat it the way she wants to eat it. Can you believe that, Dad? And she's using my favor to promote her own will and finally telling me how I should feel about the situation. Right? That is exactly what these Chaldeans did to Nebuchadnezzar. All of it. All the meanwhile, here's the kicker, Ethan secretly has an agenda because once she gets what's coming to her, he gets both ice creams. I just want you to see it in verse 12. That's what happened. Okay? Instead of just being like, what are they going to do? These guys are like not obeying and they're going to get in big trouble. No, they, hey, king, remember what you said? And then they say it back to him, including the harp, lyre, trigon, bagpipe. They say the whole thing, right? And then they tell him how disgraceful they're being and taking advantage of him. And then have the audacity to tell the king how he should feel about the situation. And then wrap it up with, hey, was this a targeted attack? Was there an agenda going into it? Now, it wasn't for the second ice cream cone, okay? But these guys, because of the Lord creating God, of the book of Genesis, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego could do what these Chaldeans could not do. And as soon as they get them out of the way, who rises back to the right-hand side of King Nebuchadnezzar? The Chaldeans. So what's the lesson for us? That good thing that only happened in Daniel. All right, guys, have a great... Yeah. The spies are everywhere. And they cannot wait to take the church down. Okay? And it starts with things like, you remember government when you told them that they could have tax breaks? And how they're using how they're using their tax breaks? They're buying big pools with their tax breaks. And that's how you should feel about it, government, because churches don't have to pay taxes, right? Yeah, right? Did you guys know that? Okay. Well, you give these churches their tax breaks, and they built a pool, and that is not Christian-like. And they get the government to realize its own rule and to tell us how we're taking advantage of that rule so they can strip us of this right that the government's given us. Small little example. Do you think they're not going to operate in the same MO is all I'm trying to say. So, be on the alert. Faith is in God. Trust in Him. Thanks for your attention.